Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yay, it's Friday, April 28th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everyone. It is a cloudy 57 degrees and a little bit nippy here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI, Neuroscience, Mini Brain Balls, Universal Basic Income, and Mood Surveillance. And by the way, yesterday was the 500th Before the First Cup up on YouTube. Actually, there were probably about 200 episodes before I started putting them on YouTube. But we hit 500, so that is quite a milestone. So we talked about a lot of things this week. We dug deep into the brain and some of the different technologies they are looking to integrate with our biological gray matter. The war machine is deeply invested through the guise of DARPA, sprinkle funding to all these different universities and medical facilities and operations where they are splicing and dicing and mixing and matching and doing all kinds of crazy things, trying to recreate biology so they can make themselves gods is pretty much where we're at. They are looking to implement the 21st century panopticon, a way to surveil the population from every aspect. We have gone into so many different perspectives of this and all the different disruptive technologies that are coming at us at 120 miles an hour right now. Lots and lots of money going into the development of these tools. And of course, they are all being developed in the name of keeping you safe or curing Nana or keeping away the boogeymen. But as every technology out there has the same flaw, it's that it's a double-edged sword. We also discovered that DARPA has been spending a lot of time and effort studying the brain, and not only the brain, but the sociology behind how to convince large groups of people to go along with the plan. And that really is the problem right now. There are people like us, resistant consumers, we're kind of questioning this narrative. But on the other hand, probably even more dangerous, that there is a large component of the population that is a successful experiment in brainwashing. We've dug way back into manipulation of thoughts, being able to implant and replace memories, being able to read your dreams, being able to read your emotions. And just yesterday, we ran across a brand new story about a company out of Tel Aviv called Beyond Verbal that dubs themselves as the emotional analytics company. We read all about them. Their brand new application called Mood Call, where you can download this app on your Android and then have it run analytics every time you get on the phone, giving you techno color, dumbed down smiley faces or unhappy faces to give you a quick Apple-esque type dashboard as to what your feelings are when you are dealing with a particular person. Well, where do you think that this is going to lead us in the future? Well, I think that we have established that our future is going to be a lot more challenging than our past has been, at least in our lifetimes. Hard times are coming, and it's all going to be because the robots are going to take all the jobs. And I know every time I say that, I kind of chuckle because you always think about some bumbling robot. And that was intentional. That was something that they put into our heads. I brought that up before when that DARPA Robotics Challenge first launched. And after they had their first challenge, DARPA put out a video that was a compilation of all the failures. And it was all the Atlas robots falling over to the circus music. And it was meant to be tongue-in-cheek, to make you laugh, to make you go, oh, look, robotics isn't that far along. We don't have to be afraid of them. But I kept warning you guys that that was just the front that they were putting on, that really behind the scenes, the Atlas that had won the competition had gone through a lot of evolution in the lab after the fact, once they picked a winner and put some big dollars behind the development of it. And we saw very quickly, a month or two later, a video came out of the very first Atlas in the lab, where it was able to climb things and jump things, pick up things, lob cinder blocks with just a flick of a wrist. It was a pretty scary looking robot, but it was still a little clunky, still was connected to pneumatics. So it wasn't really that much of a big deal. You're like, well, he's still tethered. What's he going to do? He's got a leash on him. Well, not too long after that, the video came out, and I had been the whole time jumping up and down being Chicken Little. As all these quote-unquote experts are coming out trying to tell you on the boob tube not to worry about it, Johnny, because it's 20, 30 years down the line. I'm like, oh, no, no. We are talking the law of exponential returns, technology begetting technology. So it is not a linear increase in technology anymore. We are at an exponential increase. That means that it just keeps multiplying and getting faster and faster. So what do we see? Oh, yeah, a year goes by or so, and a new video comes out. And I think they might have even have had another DARPA Grand Challenge in the middle there somewhere. But this second video of Atlas was one where it starts out in Google's lobby, because I think by this time Google owned them, not DARPA and Boston Dynamics. Google purchased them, the company that made them, had a whole division on it. And it starts in the Google lobby with a whole cadre of robots, including Atlas 2.0, but we also had Big Dog and Cheetah, and I don't know, they had all these other ones. They were pretty scary looking. All the little animal Packbot robots. There was even the one that they then added the head to. It was a long neck and a giraffe-esque type head that had the capabilities to walk up to doors and turn doorknobs and things, which is even more frightening. But Atlas 2.0, standing in line with all these other robots in Google's lobby, then embarks and walks out the emergency door. Bazoop, 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 autonomously, without pneumatics, and looking very stable, very streamlined. They had given him a new body. They had made him more aerodynamic. They had given him some pretty translucent covers on his chest. And he goes and starts taking a walk out into the snow, into the hills, into the woods, up a hillside, and rocky terrain without blinking his robot googly eyes. And I don't even know if he actually had them on his face, but I'm sure he had little cameras and GPUs integrated in there. And he took this walk, and then some point later, they may have shown him lifting boxes and utilizing him in a facility that looked like it could have been almost an Amazon distribution center, you know, anybody's distribution center, just a big room with lots of shelves and lots of boxes. And then they took, I don't know if it was in this video or one of the other ones, but I remember another one where they took a broom handle and they knocked him over right to the ground. And Atlas 2.0 goes bloop, 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 bloop. And, I mean, it doesn't matter what direction he was knocked over. He gets up, he reconfigures himself, and he's back up and running. I got to tell you guys, that was just in a short year or two from the first bumbling Atlas to this very frightening-looking Atlas that I could easily imagine being deployed not only on the battlefield, but in the police force to respond to matters of national security. We talked a long time ago about a robot called Valkyrie, and I put him in the notes the other day. I think I mentioned him, but I don't think we actually looked at him freshly. It's not even here. I don't know. It's hard to read and talk at the same time. My brain isn't that multifunctional. But one of the things about Valkyrie is that he also got a 2.0. Valkyrie originally was a robot that was developed by NASA to do spacewalks, like to go outside of the space station and fix things. Eventually, they were talking about utilizing robots such as Valkyrie for off-world missions to places like the moon and Mars to do the initial landing and maybe even the setup of some sort of space base living quarters for then the human participants that may come later. But Valkyrie 2.0, there's a story about him in IEEE Spectrum a few months back, and they had touted how, you know, he's new and improved and he could do all these things, and yeah, we could send him up to the space station, we could send him to Mars because that's going to be part of his new mission, but he can also respond to natural disasters. Now, we had kind of joked about that one of the shows this week. I had made a joke about one of these days the UN Blue Hats are going to show up and they're all going to be robots. But guess what, guys? This is kind of what this new Valkyrie 2.0 is being geared toward. You know, he's got to be multifaceted to be able to justify the taxpayer expense. You know, we are financing our own demise. We are also feeding the machine with our interactions with these devices, whether they be tin can robots, ghosts in the machine, artificially intelligent algorithms, soon to be deep learning, that are mimicking the human brain. So we have these new emotional applications, this mood call being one of quite a few now that I've been seeing coming out. We have good old Tommy Insel, who had been the director of the National Institute of Mental Health up until October, I believe, of 2016, when he left to go to Google Life Sciences Division, now named Verily. He wants to chuck out that DSM, Diagnostic Statistical Manual, and find a way to use your voice patterns to diagnose disease and then develop smartphone applications. Remember, Dr. Smartphone is coming fast and furious. We read about a company yesterday, new $60 million investment to go all smartphoney. And then right after the show, I went out to IEEE Spectrum. Someone in chat had asked me what some of the newest developments are on the robotic front. I said, well, go check out IEEE Spectrum. For anyone who is interested, it is spectrum.ieee.org. They are a really good source for especially robotic technology, but all kinds of off-the-rails technology. But I went out there yesterday. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't here. And I saw a story. Oh, yeah, here it is. That had just come out yesterday that is the exclamation point to everything we've been saying here about Dr. Smartphone. It's exactly what we've been saying. All the reasons for 5G to be rolling out is so we can get Dr. Smartphone and Facebook into Africa. Well, guess what, people? AI medicine comes to Africa's rural clinics. Ding, 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 ding. You know what? Somebody on one of the Global Council on Foreign Relations or National International WHO, or one of these multiple global organizations that are utilizing technology and especially the medical, industrial, military, academic complex to you, one of those people or groups of those people just got a gold star because this was one of those success points that showed that they just completed another level of takeover. And that's exactly what's happening. It is global takeover by the medical, military, academic, industrial complex. I think we should coin that term. Anyway, AI medicine comes to Africa's rural clinics. So they have made a milestone. Smartphone-based diagnostic tools with an artificial intelligence upgrade could save millions of lives. Now, if you know anything about marketing, and about social manipulation, you have to come up with a good sell point. That is the elevator pitch. Save millions of lives. That allows 90% of the public to get a sound bite from the boop tube of somebody dressed in a suit who looks like a person of authority to sell this to you. And you're going to step right up and open your arms to accept it. Now, we have covered many studies on this show where they've looked at people's subservience to authority, doing what they are told. One of the most famous would be the Milgram experiment. But we also covered one, probably a year, maybe a year and a half ago, about a robot in a room with a bunch of participants who didn't know what the experiment was going to be, but it was a sociology, psychology type experiment. And they had interacted with the robot. And then after a while of interacting with the robot, it started to give wrong answers. And it was pointing to the exit and then pointing to the exit and whatever. But they said, don't worry about it. So then they're in this room hanging out or doing whatever they were doing. And then the fire alarm went off. And when the fire alarm went off, this robot that these people had interacted with, that they already knew was having some malfunctions previous to this fire alarm going off, this robot was pointing them down a hallway that they knew was incorrect because there was an exit door over there that they knew. And these people, even though they knew that this robot had been already defective, they followed its direction. Now, I don't know about you, but after looking at those Microsoft studies about the majority of the general public having an attention span of that of a goldfish, and again, by design, many of these technologies throughout the last 100 years, we've determined, have been able to manipulate our reality in one way or another, and not our physical reality, but our perception of reality, whether it be through good old Bernaysian manipulation and then peer pressure manipulation, authority figure manipulation. Of course, the fear button is another great manipulation tool. The media manipulation, which is just a big part of all those other facets. But now we have devices that literally will be so integrated with our daily lives, and ones that we have now come to somewhat trust as an authority figure. We found out from a Pew Research study we looked at a couple different times this week that though 76% of business leaders are willing to open their arms to AI coming into the workplace to displace human beings, only 22% of the surveyed public right now is willing to accept an AI doctor. So Africa has been our petri dish. Remember that single fruit bat in that fruit tree that started the Ebola epidemic? So we had to launch troops and have an emergency inoculation and quarantine program. You know, poor Africa. And India is another one. Two countries that we have taken liberties to turn into a real life phase one clinical trial, human experimentation, all in the name of pandemic or emergency, to do real-time human testing. Well, artificial intelligence and robot doctors, it appears, are not going to be any different. All right, so we can save millions of lives. Let's go to Africa. In the rural health clinics across Kenya, women have started showing up with a surprising request. They have come, this is really disturbing, for their cervical selfies, quote unquote. Their enthusiasm is a good omen. Yes, it is a good omen for the Pew Research studies and for public health campaigns, which of course come out of some globalist organization against cervical cancer. now underway in 6 African countries using an optical accessory. Oh my goodness. That snaps onto any Android smartphone. Oh, make sure you wash it off afterward. And makes use of its camera. Uh-oh. Talk about the selfies. Health workers are examining women and catching early signs of cancer, enabling them to get immediate treatment. And, of course, I don't know if it's going to extrapolate on the types of future treatment they will offer, but I am sure that they will, at some point in the future, employ some sort of nanorobotics or CRISPR engineering or DARPA shape-shifting vaccine. Of course it will. And soon, this new diagnostic device will be better still. With the integration of artificial intelligence, this technology may serve as a model for smarter healthcare in Africa and soon to be you. The screening campaign relies on a tool developed by what? Oh, an Israeli company. Wow, I think we're starting to see a pattern here. Called Mobile ODT. An acronym stands for Optical Detection Technologies. Oh, they're getting pretty high-techy there. Health workers use a clip-on attachment called the EVA, the Enhanced Visual Assessment Scope, to turn a smartphone into a device similar to a colposcope. The tool the gynecologist uses to view a magnified image of a woman's cervix. This is just, I mean, good on them, but come on, really? I mean, I think they should have specialized smartphones just used for things such as that, just like they do with thermometers. You know, you got an oral thermometer, and then you got that other thermometer with the big red end that you know you never put near your face. I think we should do the same with smartphones. Looks like they got an Apple iPhone attached. They should make it, instead of white or black, they should make it the red iPhone. I'm sorry, guys, but this is just too much. With an associated phone app, the screeners can analyze the image, show it to the patient so they could do a selfie, and I'm going to add, and post on social media, and then store the data in the cloud. Yes, of course they would be putting hoochie-coochie pictures in the cloud. Come on. Oh, God. The campaign's organizer originally worried that women would not be willing to be examined in such an intimate way. Well, of course. But hey, it must have put a spin on it somewhere. Or maybe it reached into the dark recesses. Oh my God. But in fact, many women have been not only willing, but also seem quite interested in seeing their photos. Oh, but instead, the big challenge is ensuring that health workers make accurate diagnoses from these images. But that's where AI comes into play. Oh, Watson is going to become a gynecologist now. This sounds like, though, it's not Watson that they're using. But I bet they'll feed him some data. Anyway, at Global Good, which is the innovation hub where two of us, Champlin and Bell, work, and we want to use today's ubiquitous mobile technology, soon to be even more with 5G, to transform healthcare, particularly in parts of the world that lack medical infrastructure. Like what? Oh, the United States. Yes, a crumbling medical infrastructure. Don't worry about it, because remember, they're having so much trouble coming up with a plan that will help all Americans. 21st Century Cures Act, open all those doors to innovation and you being the free guinea pig. So don't worry about it. You will get your hoochie coochie cam soon. I think I'm going to use that in the title, hoochie coochie cam. As a test case, we've partnered with Mobile ODT to integrate machine learning technology into the EVA scope. Oh, what a nice little acronym. And in the late 2017, We will begin field trials in Ethiopia. So look out, Ethiopia. Your hoochie selfies are coming. This is really, really, I mean, I guess if it helps diagnose disease, but guess whose name I see in the next paragraph? Oh my God, Bill Gates, how did we know? This initiative fits into the mission of Global Good, which is a collaborative effort between Billy Gates and Bellevue, Washington-based company called Intellectual Ventures to develop technologies that improve lives in poorer parts of the world. In this case, we are drawing from seemingly esoteric research, in machine learning and taking advantage of what are called convolutional neural networks, or CNNs for short. Again, another convenient acronym. Intellectual Ventures founder Nathan Murthroyd pioneered the idea of applying these computer science tactics to medical diagnostics, arguing that we can use CNNs, not the CNN, not fake news CNN, no, convolutional neural networks, to transform mobile phones into super smart diagnostic devices and thus help save millions of lives. It may not be possible to send an expert doctor to every clinic across Africa or the world, but with AI, we can send their expertise. Guys, I mean, this literally, for non-invasive monitoring, this is sure becoming invasive. And it's to get even more invasive if we can make it there today. There's good reason to focus on cervical cancer. As a test case for this technology, about 270,000 women die from the disease every year, according to the World Health Organization. Ding, ding. And 85% of those deaths occur in low-income countries. This disease strikes women in the prime adult years when they are raising families and earning money, and it is why the nonprofit Pink Ribbon, Red Ribbon, which fights women's cancers in countries where the need is greatest, has partnered with groups around the world to provide cervical cancer screening at local health clinics. Up until now, the cost of wide-scale screening has been prohibitive in developing countries. But just like everything else, this newfangled technology is going to put some more high-wage earners, like gynecologists, out of business. For the traditional screening protocol, it's been used around the world for decades. It takes health workers getting samples of cervical cells and then sending them to a lab for analysis. But don't worry about it, because we will be able to review images of the cervix on the fly now. So I don't know, guys. I don't think we need to read anymore. This story goes on and on and on about cervical imaging. So again, like I said, talk about invasiveness. But don't worry about it, because a new story, actually this came out last year, but so this ties to some of the new stuff that we've been talking about. Organs on a Chip, a DARPA-backed project, was released last May, a year and two weeks ago. And they have a DARPA-backed project that mimics the entire human body on a series of chips. The Weiss Institute, ding, ding, biologically inspired engineering. Remember, they're out of Harvard. Totally connected to that beehive of takeover that is happening there. The Weiss Institute at Harvard is creating miniaturized versions of human organs that could one day be used to test drugs as unique as the patients that take them. Back in 2012, DARPA wanted to create a version of the human body that could be put onto a series of chips, a collection of 10 separate organ systems connected with blood vessel type structures and regulated automatically. And it was prepared to pay $37 million to get it built. The funding for the project went to the Weiss Institute, a Harvard unit that works on biologically inspired engineering projects and is the home of the RoboBees. And an organization expects to have a working system by the summer of 2017. So we'll have to look in on that. Human organs are hugely complex things, just like brains. We talked about those mini brain balls and the creepiest mini brain balls yet yesterday. And bringing people back from the dead with some of these same technologies that they are learning to mimic from the ground up. But this body on a chip is bringing that a step closer, allowing them to mix and match organ systems on the fly and then run simulations backed with an artificial intelligence to see what would happen when they employ some of these biotech manufactured drugs and substances to the closed system. Now, if we take a look at that raising the dead, that's something I wanted to get to. We had talked about those mini brain balls. We had talked about the brand new creepy mini brain balls. And we had talked about brain balls even way previous to that. The story yesterday was scientists brew up the creepiest batch of brain balls yet. I have to laugh each time I read that. But there was a story I dug up previous stories that we read about mini brain balls as well. And I don't know where I put it now. Come on. How could I be that deficient? I don't know. I lost it. But it had talked about growing out of just a very, very small number of these stem cells to make these brain balls. They could grow hundreds of them at a time in a brain farm. Now, we had run across that brain farm reference in the story yesterday as well. But just thinking about brain farms and about them cracking all of the neurological code, about them figuring out ways different parts of the brain work, they discovered that there also were different types of neurons. If they just let these mini brain balls grow for, you know, like a year in a petri dish in a lab, which is what the story said, and just let them continue to grow, they found that the cells in the brain started to differentiate into different brain systems and connect together, which is even more frightening. And they even determined that these brains are thinking, and they were starting to develop sensory input sections like vision, like being able to determine light to dark, like olfactory senses, which would be smell. Well, so there were other experiments then going on globally with the brain, and one was to resurrect clinically dead individuals. But one of the things that I didn't realize is that they were going to be doing other types of things to these brain dead individuals as well as injecting their brains with stem cells to see if they could rejuvenate. One of the things was transcranial laser therapy, which is the same sort of technology that we were reading about not too long ago, a few weeks maybe a month, that they were experimenting with the mice. And they were using these transcranial lasers to shine on the mice's skull to stimulate the oblongata, I believe it was, that caused them to turn into predators. Do you remember that? That hit that part of the brain that caused their mouth to start chomping and they became killing machines. Well, wait a second. We have clinically brain dead individuals here that we're going to inject some stem cells into to kickstart their brain. They may or may not have brain damage. I think in one of the stories I was reading, they were going to be targeting people who actually had traumatic brain injury from an accident that had put them into that position. These people were also not running their organ systems on their own. They were on life support systems, so they clinically are dead, just still connected to the machine. So let's think about this for a minute. They were looking at very clinically dead people who were still who were being artificially kept alive. They were thinking about, number one, injecting their brains with some of these pluripotent stem cells to create little, who knows, mini brain ball differentiated cell growth inside of these brains to hope maybe it might repair some damage. But they were also talking about doing transcranial laser therapy, which is the very same therapy that they just were experimenting with to turn mice, which usually are a precursor to before human experimentation, into predatory killers. Now, I don't know when zombie apocalypse comes to mind, when I start thinking about potentially having one of these individuals wake up and having the brain damage maybe be a little bit extensive and maybe targeting an area of the brain in a human that might turn them into like killers or something. I don't know. Just color me silly. But the fact that the Defense Department has been working on a super soldier project for a very long time, has been working on brain manipulation, brain stimulation, brain interaction, brain implantation. I mean implants, not literally implanting a brain, but maybe that too. You know, we even covered an experiment yesterday about worm brain cells being put into a Lego robot. I also found there had been another experiment that we may have covered, but it was a long time ago, about rat brain cells being put into a robot as well and having it learn how to get around obstacles and that sort of thing. So it's not too much of a stretch to take something like an Atlas II and a few mini brain balls and some of our understanding now of how to grow and build brains. Artificial intelligence on top of that is an additional software layer. And we got ourselves a big, big problem, Clyde. We got some killing machines that are really smart and really strong. And there's another one here that also made me think of some DARPA experimentation with prosthetics that they have been doing. And they also have gotten some of these newfangled prosthetics down to where the patient has the ability to use just mind control. Yes, I said it. Mind control, the thoughts of moving their prosthetic to get an interaction. These new prosthetics are connected directly to the brain stem. And they even have touch sensation. So listen, one of these other things that they were talking about doing with these technically, clinically dead individuals in this experimentation in India was nerve stimulation. Now, that's something that we're seeing a lot of through, again, agencies like DARPA with their ElectRx program, which is stimulating bodily nerves to try to cure or interact with different bodily systems. They have been messing around with that vagus nerve. The vagus nerve connects to all of your major organs and also is a direct connect between your gut and your brain, so they can manipulate biochemical interaction and then potentially mood, which is another thing that everyone seems to be very interested in, is our emotions and being able to control them. But listen, the last thing that they were talking about was nerve stimulation, another non-invasive technique that involves delivering electrical impulses to the median nerve of the upper limbs. This was hoping to bring back the dead. Now, of course, India stepped in. They said they had ethical concerns about this after the biotech company that was involved in this project got the green light here from the U.S. and the Indian National Institutes of Health to begin their clinical trials. That company was called Biquark, and the project was called Reanima, which should make you nervous, especially if anyone saw H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator, that horrible B-movie. But it was a good book. Yeah, that's something that we really want to be doing. But here's the scary part of all of this. The reason why this is so important is that DARPA is working on weaponizing the ability to control and take over the brain. Back in 2014, the military funds a brain-computer interface to control feelings. But don't worry about that, Johnny, because they now have wireless access to the brain. That just came out of Scientific American the other day, utilizing EEGs. But back in 2014, there was a $70 million program to try to develop brain implants that would be able to regulate emotions, ding-a-ling-a-ling, of the mentally ill. Now let's let that sink in for a moment. We have DARPA in 2014 already working on brain implants to help you regulate your quote-unquote emotions that they deem to be with outside of operating parameters to be able to cure you. Of course, it's going to be done. The research is going to be done in the name of curing soldiers with things such as PTSD. But think about it. We just had an Israeli company developing a piece of software for your smartphone with really dumb colored smiley faces to bring the flocks of the masses into downloading this application and integrating it into their day, because it's so much fun to know how you feel when you talk to your mom or Uncle Charlie, who calls you repeatedly 2 o'clock in the morning after he's had a six pack and bitches at you because you never finished college. Yeah, you know, and then this stuff's going to be pushed up to the cloud, and you're going to be surveilled as part of the neurological surveillance that is mentioned in the 21st Century Cures Act. They'll be able to intervene at the push of a button, whether it be with a zippity-zap, wirelessly interacting with your brainwaves. Monitor brainwaves on the fly. Say this five times fast. Electroencephalography is used to require a person to sit still while a computer tracked the brain's electrical impulses. But a new technology untethers this research, and I am incorrect. This was from 2012. What? Yes, they can now monitor your brain waves wirelessly without you even knowing it. It's like a mental gas gauge, and they can tell how you are interacting and whether or not you have any type of mental disorders. But guys, don't worry about it, because they have all kinds of issues with the 21st century. We have all of the robots coming to take our jobs. We have all these people that are going to be displaced. We have all these people in the future that aren't going to know how to handle the new paradigm. But all you got to do, Johnny, is put on this new emotive. Is that what it was called? Hold on, I can scroll down. Elafemit, that's what it was called. Your little brain pulse machine that they now have out in Kickstarter. Non-invasive, FDA-approved technology allowing you to set your mood on the fly with extra low-frequency electromagnetic pulses. Boom, bong, bong, 20 or 10 hertz, bong, to take you down a couple notches. I mean, guys, that is going to be a part of your smart doctor Apple iPhone with, what was it called? Cervical cancer detectors. This is just really, I can't even get over how disturbing this is. And if not to add insult to injury, let's take it one more little tiny step forward down that scary hallway. They now have a new therapy that can also use brain stimulation to influence honest behavior. So not only will they be able to dial you up a new emotion, bloop, they'll be also able to give you a few zippity zaps to make certain that Johnny isn't having unclean thoughts. Researchers at the University of Zurich have identified the brain mechanism that governs decisions between honesty and self-interest. So don't think about yourself, Johnny. We got to make sure you think about everyone. And the global initiative to live as humans in harmony using a non-invasive brain stimulation, they could even increase honest behavior. Honesty plays a key role in social and economic life, and without honesty, promises are not kept, Contracts are not enforced. Taxes remain unpaid. Of course they do. So, guys, here's how they're going to take us over. See, they already have AI working with companies, and I think this one was also Israeli, that used AI and cameras to detect micro expressions in your face to determine whether or not your little tell that most people can't see, but the AI can with the robot googly eyes, whether or not you're telling a fib or you're hiding something. So worry. Bzz, bzz, bzz. All right, Johnny, are you going to pay your taxes this month? Well, of course I am. I'll make sure I don't put the money aside to buy food. I will just pay you, Mr. Estate that owns everything and controls everything. Don't worry about it. It will be auto-deducted, Johnny, next week. Despite the importance of honesty for society, its biological basis remains poorly understood. But the researchers at the University of Zurich, together with colleagues from Chicago and Boston, now show that honest behavior can be increased by means of non-invasive brain stimulation. How, you know, you really got to start seeing a pattern here, because we're just seeing this over and over again. Non-invasive brain stimulation. No brain implants, Johnny. You know what? I don't remember the name of the organization. Our study, it's right here. Hold on. We got a Pew Research study that showed that people weren't jiving too much with the implantables. We decided that we will come up with ways to just zippity-zap you, because we put billions of dollars into it anyway. Let's find ways to manipulate those brain patterns. And the results of their research highlight the deliberation process between honesty and self-interest in the right dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. They did an experiment with rolling dice, and they found that there were less lies through brain stimulation. Researchers applied transcranial direct current stimulation, which is, again, another DARPA experiment that they were working on, over a region in the right dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. This non-invasive brain stimulation method makes brain cells more sensitive, i.e., they are more likely to be active. And when the researchers applied the stimulation during the task, which was rolling die, participants were less likely to cheat. However, the number of consistent cheaters remained the same. Christian Ruff, UZH professor of neuroeconomics, points out, quote, "This finding suggests that the stimulation mainly reduces cheating in participants who actually did experience a moral conflict, but did not influence the decision-making process in those not committed to maximizing their earnings." So the conflict between money and morals, which, hey, isn't that the root of the problem of the dangling carrot? It is all about whether or not you stand up for what is right, even if it means a loss for you, or it means more work for you, or something else. Standing by your moral fiber versus selling out the human race. And you know what? These scientists that are doing this research know very well these chinks in the human armor, and they obviously are finding ways to manipulate those. The research found that the stimulation not only affected the process of weighing up material versus moral motives, they found no effects of other types of conflict that do not involve moral concerns. Similarly, an additional experiment shows that stimulation did not affect honest behavior when the cheating led to a payoff for another person instead of oneself, and this conflict was therefore between two moral motives. The pattern of results suggests that the stimulated neurobiological processes specifically involves and resolves trade-offs between material self-interest and honesty. So how greedy are you, Johnny? Because if you're greedy, hey, it's a mental disorder. Bzz, bzz, bzz. All right, you're all fixed now. So where do we go from here? So let's add to that now this 21st Century Cures Act, component section 399S, surveillance of neurological diseases. This bill was passed in December of 2016. And it talks about being able to monitor anybody who has a problem, anyone who has been determined to be mentally ill by the system. In general, Section A, the Secretary, acting through the Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and in coordination with other agencies as the Secretary determines, shall, as appropriate, 1. Enhance and expand infrastructure and activities to track the epidemiology of neurological diseases, and 2. Incorporate information obtained through such activities into an integrated surveillance system, which may consist of or include a registry to be known as the National Neurological Condition Surveillance System. B, research. The Secretary shall ensure that the National Neurological Condition Surveillance System is designed in a manner to facilitate further research on neurological diseases. Section C, content. In carrying out subsection A, the Secretary shall provide for the collection and the storage of information on the incident and prevalence of neurological diseases in the United States. 2. To the extent practicable, shall provide for the collection and the storage of other available information on neurological diseases, including information related to persons living with neurological diseases who choose to participate. Wink, check that box. Such as demographics, age, race, ethnicity, sex, geographic location, family history, and other information as appropriate, like, oh, I don't know, type of information that Google can already garner. B, risk factors that may be associated with neurological diseases, such as genetic and environmental risk factors and other information like, oh, I don't know, let's swab our DNA, upload it to 23andMe, check that box. Number C, diagnosis and progression markers, ding, 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 now can be done by a smartphone app out of Tel Aviv. And then treatment thought up by people such as Tommy himself, former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, now over at Google, who is part of all of this. Number 4, may add issues and address issues identified during the consultation process. Number 5, initially may address a limited number of neurological diseases, but hey, we want to push this out across the board. And carrying out the section, the Secretary shall consult with individuals and appropriate expertise, like Tommy Inso, including epidemiologists with experience in disease surveillance and registries, representatives of national voluntary health associations like the All of Us program, focus on neurological diseases and have demonstrated experience in research, care, patient services, health information technology experts, clinicians with expertise, and research scientists with experience conducting translational research or utilizing surveillance systems for scientific research purposes. Guys, ding-a-ling-a-ling, the bells are ringing and the fat lady singing. Here it comes. And it is law now as of December 2016. So Google also wants to monitor your mental health, and you should welcome it into your mind. This is a story out of October 2015. So guys, this is already happening. Use of technology to track and treat mental illness is deeply worrying, but the author says, sadly necessary. Next week, so this is 2015, he left in October. Tommy Insel leaves his post as the head of the National Institute of Mental Health, a job that made him America's top mental health doctor. Dr. Insel is a neuroscientist and a psychiatrist and a leading authority in both the medicine and public policies needed to deal with the problems of the mind. He is 64, but he is not retiring. He is going to work for Google. More precisely, he's going to work for Google's Life Sciences Division, one of its more exotic provinces of its online empire. He is going to investigate how technology, yes, like the sound of your voice, can help diagnose and treat mental conditions. Google doesn't want to just read your mind, but it wants to fix it too. And it is not alone. Apple, IBM, and Intel are among technology companies exploring this very same field. IBM this year in 2015 carried out research with a Columbia University study that suggested that computer analysis of speech patterns can more accurately predict the onset of psychosis, ding ding, than a conventional test involving blood samples or brain scans. Other researchers theorize that a person's internet search history or even their shopping habits can identify the first signs of mental illness. Computers can now tell when something is about to go terribly wrong in somebody's mind. Boop, 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 boop. Send out the white coats. I mean, we've joked about that, but that is no joke. That development, maybe it's going to be the white coat drones. That development is striking enough in itself, but the way in which researchers like Incel want to use this new technology raises even more questions. Wearable technology has been a hot topic in medical innovation for several years. So has Dr. Smartphone. And a growing number of people choose to track their own physical conditions using things such as Fitbits, tiny wearable devices to monitor your movements, pulse rates, sleep patterns, and more. Once the preserve of obsessive fitness fanatics, self-monitoring has become something that we determined is all about this peer pressure thing, and it is going to become, quote-unquote, mandatory voluntary in our future in the name of keeping you healthy, keeping you safe, and providing you health care. Dr. Incel is part of a school of thought that suggests that technology is better suited to mental health, providing you real-time analytics through things such as your tone of voice, speech patterns, physical movements, picking up early signs of trouble. Yes, we live in a world now where your smartphone might observe you and determine your mental health capacity. And if you don't find that prospect disturbing, you are either fantastically trusting. Remember, they are manufacturing trust, pushing those buttons of feel good. We could save millions of people, but making you either fantastically trusting of companies and governments, or you haven't thought about this enough. All right, guys, have an awesome weekend. Make sure you stay tuned.
JJ Inc. from Against the Wall, and you're listening to me.